My wife deserves every bit of that. Our friends call our anniversary St. Kathy Day. And her name's Margaret, which is really weird. But anyway, they call it St. Kathy Day and everything. And Kathy and I have been married for 30 years, and she really does deserve that applause. I deserve a little bit of it because we're going through menopause right now. See the guys laughing nervously? Don't go there. And all the guys that are laughing really hard, you have no idea what you're in for, okay? So yeah, it's really weird because it's kind of like living with a polar bear. It's like a bipolar bear because I never know what's going to come at me, you know. And so we're having a lot of fun, but we are grandparents now. We have a grown daughter who's a flight attendant with Delta. Our son's a police officer in Auburn, Alabama. And I'm just going to share this. My 4-year-old grandson, who is the delight of my eye, is having surgery tomorrow morning. And so Pop-Pop's going to take a red eye after the show and get home. So I can be there and cry. Anyway, it's nothing big. It's just tonsils and adenoids and everything, but he's just doing that. So normally I would stay until the last person leaves after an event to talk to you because tonight what I hope to do is make you laugh, but I want you to unzip a little bit and let me tinker with your heart a little bit, and then I got to zip you up and then leave. And so normally I stay afterwards and talk and pray with you and everything, and this night I won't be able to do that simply because I love my grandson more than I love you, okay? Everybody okay with that? Okay, good. Thank you so much. I've been married for 30 years, and I have been I've been a comic longer than anything. Other than being alive, I've been a comic longer than I've been a Christian. I've been a comic longer than I've been married. I've been a comic. It's the only thing I really remember because I started doing stand-up. I actually started doing open mic nights when I was in high school in 1976, okay? And so I've been doing comedy a long time. And I started out in the clubs, you know, and I was opening for people like Ray Romano and Billy Crystal and Sinbad. And I'm not name-dropping. I'm just sharing some things that I've done that you haven't. And so I was out on the road, and I just loved it, you know? And then I became a Christian, and then what happened was really crazy, was I was out touring with Sinbad, and a newspaper reporter came out. We were in a city, and they wanted to do a story on Sinbad because he just recently won Star Search. And so being, you know, nice to me, he included me. And so in the interview, they asked him all these questions and everything, and they asked me a couple, and you know, but it was primarily for him. You know, it was his thing. And so when the article came out, there was this big, long article about Sinbad, and it said all these wonderful things and all his accomplishments. And right at the bottom, the last line simply said this: opening for Sinbad, Christian comedian Steve Geyer. There was a problem. I was not a Christian comedian. I was a comedian. I was a nightclub comic who had recently converted to Christianity. My spirit was saved, but my mouth was not yet. And a church saw that newspaper article and decided to book me to do their Valentine's Day banquet for their senior adults. Now, you're laughing because you weren't there. Nobody told me I had to change my material. So I'm up there just firing away, and you could see the look of horror on people's faces. And then at one point, one guy yelled out, "Crucify him, we want Barabbas." So that was my introduction to the church, right? So I started doing Christian comedy, and then for several years, I, you know, put out some records and stuff and did all these great things that I really enjoyed doing. But my kids were getting a little bit older, and I found that I was missing a lot. So I wanted to stay home, and I got ordained and everything, went to ministry school, and actually pastored, came off the road for about 14 years, and did 4.5 years in Nashville, and then 10 years where we are in Atlanta. And then in 2013, I went back on the road. Because of church people. You know who you are. I'm going to let you fill in the blank. Okay. Now, the reason I'm letting you pause is I want you to take all that in, because here's the deal. I love people. I absolutely love people, and I'm fascinated with the behaviors of people. In fact, for a long time, I used people. I didn't even realize I was doing it. Because I was a comic, I used them for material. That's what I did. I would observe. I would go to places, and I was there. But then when I became a Christian, I learned that not only was I created in the image of God, but you are too. So there was now this curiosity that I had about you, this thing that I would use for people where I wanted to say, you know, I could use stuff for comedy. But then all of a sudden there was this intrinsic value that was added to it that you were created in the image of God. So I better pay attention to you. So if I have 5 minutes with you, 3 minutes with you, I'm going to try to remember you like Karen. Is that Karen back there? Hey, Karen. I signed a book for Karen today. I asked her how she spelled it. She looked at me like I had two heads. K-A-R-E-N. But in my line of work, you have to ask, oh, and you write it to Karen, K-A-R-E-N. It's spelled K-R-Y-S-N-N-O-P-L-L-L-J. Okay, Karen. Right? And so what happened was, is I was fascinated from the difference from between doing nightclubs and doing church. Because here's what I found. I love you guys. I love you little Canadians, but you're just like Americans. Now, there's some differences, like you say A at the end of the sentence, which I think is really cute. Don't act like you don't. You're like, oh, you know, how you doing, eh? I think that's cute. I was at a show one time. We were in Saskatchewan, and this guy walks up to me, and he's kind of mad at the intermission. He goes, we don't say A, A. I said, you just did. He goes, no, I didn't, eh? And his wife's elbowing him, and she's like, shut up, eh, you know? I think the A is cute. I think you should embrace it. We say, huh, right? Have you ever heard us talk? Now, I'm from the South, man. When I get tired and my accent comes out and I get a little twangy, you people look at me like with pity. You're like, oh, you poor thing. Do you know how to read? Right? Because that's not a real intelligent sound, and is it, right? So, you know, you don't want your neurosurgeon walking in, you know. Morning. Hey, sunshine. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to peel your scalp open, and then we're going to peel the front of your face off, and we're going to crack a hole in your skull. We're going to dig around in there. You're going to be fine as a frog hair. Right? And it's okay. Those are my people. You can make fun of those people. But embrace the A. I think it's you. It almost sounds like you're a little insecure, too. Like you need affirmation from me. It's like, well, it's cold, eh? Yeah, you're right. It is cold. Thanks for sharing that with me, right? And I love it when it's like I was in Edmonton, and sometimes it's really cold, you know, and it's like, you know, 30 and 40 below, and I'm like, oh, this is cold. And Canadians get this thrill up their leg to say, oh, this ain't cold. Shut up. When you can feel your nose hairs, it's cold. You with me, you know? I can't wait for you to come down to Florida in August and you go, man, it's hot. I'm gonna go, this ain't hot. You're not melting, are you? Right? But Canadians, you guys are cute. You have Tim Hortons. I love Tim Hortons, man. I'm a Starbucks guy, Tim Hortons guy. But I love the environment of Tim Hortons. I just love the whole thing, you know. I was in there once, and I don't like the drive-thru as much because, like, now you guys with the Tim Hortons drive-thru, especially out east, oh, my gosh. Like, I live in Chick-fil-A land. I go to the drive-thru, and there's three cars ahead of me. I go somewhere else. Tim Hortons, man, y'all wrap around the building. They're putting heroin in your coffee, okay? But I like to go in, and I'm standing in a Tim Hortons, you know, waiting my turn. And this lady steps in front of me and says, excuse me. I said, yes, ma'am. And I step back, and I was wearing cowboy boots. And the guy behind me was wearing open-toed Chacos. Oh, honey. Not only can I hear them, but I can feel his toes crumbling under the weight of the heel of my boot. And I was mortified. I wheeled around, and before I could say a word, he goes, sorry. I swear to you, this really happened. Sorry. I said, dude, I stepped on you. And he said, and I quote, I was standing too close, eh? What is wrong with you people, man? And I love that about you. I love going east to west and west to east, man. I've been from Vancouver Island all the way to Prince Edward Island. I've been to Newfoundland. Have y'all ever been to that country? We got a tour there, part of the February tours there. We're doing the four cities in Newfoundland in February, and I'm taking an interpreter, man, because I can't understand those people. Because not only do they say things backwards, they also talk in sounds and clicks like iron, nern. Did I miss something? Oh, yeah, he asked me if I had needle nose pliers, and I told him no, I had a flathead screwdriver. He wanted a bar. He said, no, I don't really need to do that. I could use a cross there, but I said, that's okay. And he said, well, that's all right. Arn, Narn? Yes, bye. I'm at the hotel and they call me up. Stays where you're to till we comes where you're at. Hello? Is that? Say that again? And if you break it down, it actually makes sense. Stays where you're to till we comes where you're at. Right? But there's other ones that make no sense at all. They have the double negatives and you don't know if you answer yes in the positive or no in the negative. I swear to you, actual conversation. We're getting fuel, and I was outside the car talking to my tour rep, and we're standing there talking, and this guy walks up with a truck full of with a firewood. He pulls up, and he goes, "Don't know nobody don't want to buy a cord of wood, do you?" Say that again. Don't know nobody don't want to buy a cord of wood, do you? Two no's make a yes. No. I don't know how to answer you. But they are the friendliest. Now, Canadians, you guys are friendly and kind. I love that. Newfies got you beat. This is a true story. I was in Gander a year earlier. The following year, I'm in St. John. This couple walks up to me and says, "Do you remember us?" I said, "Yes, ma'am. I remember the conversation." And they said, "We saw you in Gander, but we live here in St. John." I said, "Oh." And they said, and I quote, if we would have known you was coming, you could have stayed at our house." Now, isn't that sweet? And they meant it. They weren't being facetious. But here's what they said after that. "You'd have your own room and everything." I kind of thought that was implied in the invitation, you know? I mean, can you imagine how awkward that would be laying in bed that night going, "Thanks for having me." No, really, I mean it. What time's breakfast? I don't think I'm going to sleep much here tonight. I don't think this is going to work. But one of my favorite things, I picked up a phrase, and I pick up phrases from a lot of different places, but my favorite phrase of all time I got from Newfoundland, it's when something's broken. Now, I have been assured that in Canada, this is not a bad word, so I can say it. And I've done it a few times, so I know that nobody's ever yelled at me for saying this. But when something is broken in Newfoundland, this is what they say. Boy, the arse has dropped right out of her. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh at my own stuff. I'm sorry. The arse has dropped right out of her. That's broken. You know, if the arse has dripped right out of her, then it's broken. Okay, I'll just tell you that. If you can't fix it with duct tape or a hammer, the arse has dropped right out of her. I'm just trying to see how many times I can say arse. That's all I was trying to do. I was up to six, I think, so. But here's what happened. I found out something about Canadian Christians that you guys are just like American Christians are. You're exactly the same. Let me explain what I mean by that. When I was doing nightclubs, I would do a show, and I would just do stand-up. I didn't do a thought for the day or anything, you know, any kind of tender thing. It was just stand-up, 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 stand-up. And after the show, people would walk up and say, "Hey, can I buy you a drink?" And I'd say, "Sure." And I'd go to the bar, and I'd go, "Two coffees." And they would go, "Get a real drink." And I'd go, "Coffee is a real drink, and you should have some now." And we would chit-chat, and then I would ask one question, "How are you doing?" And these people that had only seen me on stage would unzip and tell me the secrets of their heart. And then I became a pastor. And I would ask people how they were doing, and they, American Christians, do what Canadian Christians do. They lie. "You bunch of liars. You lie in the parking lot. You lie in the vestibule." That's what we call a lobby. "You lie in the sanctuary." We walk them and go, "How you doing?" "Great, liars." Let me ask y'all a question. How many of you in this room have ever had a fight with your wife or your husband on the way to church? Can I see your hands? Okay, okay. The rest of you don't go to church. Or you're lying. Because it's gonna happen. You know what I'm talking about, right? Have you ever been dressed and ready to go to church and everything's good? And everything's fine. You can actually see the church in the distance. You're almost to the parking lot. And all of a sudden, bang, it goes off. And you're yelling and you're screaming at each other. "No, you shut up. No, you shut up." And then we hit the church parking lot and we're like, if we could only hear what was going on in the car, right? I swear I'm going to kill you. Yes, I am. First, I'm going to shoot you. And then I'm going to push you off a roof. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to push you off a roof. And then we walk in and go, "Hey, how you doing?" "Great." I would literally walk up to people and say, how you doing? And I knew that they were struggling. I knew their lives. And I would say, hey, how you doing? Oh, Pastor Steve, I'm just under the spout where the glory's coming out. You what? Here's an all-time least favorite of mine. Hey, how are you doing this morning? Oh, I'm just passing through till the breakthrough. I'm going to punch you in the neck. You've lied, haven't you? Wouldn't you just one time want to go and somebody's handing you a bulletin, how you doing? And they say, how you doing? Wouldn't you just like to go, do you really want to know? Watch what they do. Where's the volunteer coordinator? I was not trained for this. I don't know what to do. Because you don't know what to do. But what if somebody said, yeah, I really want to know. You look like you don't have a friend in the world. Well, if you really want to know, on the way to church today, I don't know what happened. The kids were just, we were fine. And all of a sudden, man, my wife and I got into it. And we started screaming and hollering at each other in front of the kids. And I've said some things, dude, I can't believe they came out of my mouth. And I have so wounded her. She's still sitting in the car in the parking lot crying her makeup off, man. Can you go pray with her? I have to go preach. Now, how do you think I know that? I spent a lot of time with Mark and Michelle, and they're doing a lot better. They're doing so much better. Praise him. Nah, you're looking at him. That was me. And it's a true story. I walked up, and one of the elders, a guy named Chris Tanner, saw me, and I said, how you doing? And I said, sorry, that's rude to look at my watch. I'm trying to find a clock here. I told him what was going on. And he said, well, let me go pray with Kathy. And that Sunday morning, I remember we're walking out and telling the congregation, look, I'm in attention here this morning. I've got to preach a sermon, and I don't know if Kathy's in the room or not, but my heart and my head are with her and not really what I'm doing right now, but I've got to get there. And I'm in a bit of attention because I have a really reliable source to teach a message from, but it's going to be delivered by a very flawed messenger. Are you guys okay with that this morning? And people began applauding, and I was like, wow, you know. And I had people come up and say, you know, Steve, I always thought I could trust you with the junk in my life. But I also got people that wrote me these anonymous letters and slid them under my door that said, you know, that was inappropriate what you did. You're supposed to be a leader and an example. And I'm thinking of what, a liar, right? So what I want to do tonight is I don't want to tell you anything that's not true, that I haven't been through, that I don't want to tell you anything I know. I want to tell you what I'm learning. I've been learning a lot after 30 years of marriage. Love is blind, but marriage is an eye-opener. Ain't it? How many of you guys, when you were dating, remember you drive 45 minutes so you could see your now wife just for 10 minutes? If you could only get 10 minutes with her, you'd drive for 45 minutes, and now you won't go in the kitchen if she's in there. There's butcher knives in the kitchen. Right? It's a little different, isn't it, right? And what happens is, and I know that, I mean, there's differences. Men and women, there's a lot of differences. Men have this ability to just be disgusting and not even realize they're doing it. Like, ladies, how many of you knew that your husband would smell his underwear to see if they're clean before he got married? That's not in a textbook anywhere, is it? And you ask any guy in this room, you say, hey, are those underwear clean? He'll walk over, pick them up off the floor, and be like, no. They're not even mine. That's really gross. Right? It was so different. Like when Kathy and I got married, all the differences. Like how many of you guys remember when you had the ability to dress yourself? Remember that? You could dress yourself? And now you can't? Okay, you okay? I'm ready to go. Are you wearing that? No, honey, I put this on to make you laugh. But you can't do that to her. She comes out all ready to go, you're not wearing that. It's like, right? Yeah. Has your wife ever said to you, are you quitting weight? Don't you ever do that, guys. Don't you ever. She'll trick you like, does this outfit make me look fat? Don't even go, I don't think it's the outfit. Don't do that. Don't. You just, without even missing a beat, go, you know, I'm so glad you brought this up, honey. I thought you were anorexic. It's different, isn't it? Our bathroom was totally different. I didn't know what to do. Man, when we got married, I was single for a long time, and I never had anything frilly in my bathroom. And now I've got this toilet set. There's this little furry thing on the tank lid and around the tank, and it's around the lid, a little matching little mat there. And it's like, wow, you're all dressed up with nowhere to go. Kathy bought a toilet brush. I had never owned a toilet brush in my life. And to this day, guys, I got to tell you the truth, I still prefer toilet paper. It is funny, isn't it? Okay. Look, I'll be 60 years old in April. I've got grown children. I'm a grown man. I have got grandchildren. I've been doing this for a long time, and people ask me all the time, what is your favorite joke? I go, that one. And they say, why? And I said, well, number one, it's funny. Number two, it makes religious people go like this. But the best part is about a third of the audience still hasn't gotten it yet. So that's, you know. You mean he used to clean his toilet with toilet paper? No, honey, he, oh. You know, I used to specialize in premarital counseling. I did most of the weddings at our church. I was the teaching pastor, but I did most of the weddings, most of the funerals. And again, just because I love people. And I remember when couples would walk in and they would just make me want to vomit because they were so in love. Oh, Pastor Steve, we're so in love. We have everything in common. We finish each other's sentences. We're just alike. Well, then one of you is unnecessary. One of you needs to go right now, right? But they would get together and they would have these, oh, this little love fest, and it would just drive me up a wall. Because they had no clue what they were in for. Absolutely no clue what they were in for. And they'd go, oh, you know, and to burst their bubble, I would look at them and go, do either of you two know what a colonoscopy is? What? Do you know what a colonoscopy is? Why are you talking? Because this isn't love. This is infatuation. You know what love is? Is that when you, one of or both of you turn 40 and one or both of you has to have the procedure and they take your spouse and they go up your back door with an air rifle and fill you up till you look like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade balloon. And then you're asleep for all of that, but when you're wide awake, that's when you have to let it all come out. And there's no dignified way to do that. And true love is when your spouse is going through that, you're sitting there holding their hand in front of all the other people, letting it out, going, it's okay, honey, just let it out, just let it out, just let it out. That's love. Look at all the people who have had colonoscopies. Yeah, praise him. Praise him. Because these couples would come in, and they would have no clue what was going on. And I remember these couples would come in, and they'd be, oh, so lovey, dovey, 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 dovey. And then I remember one time this couple came in. I had done their wedding several years earlier with Scott and Heather. Scott sits down, stares at the bookcase. Heather stares out the window. I said, what are we doing here today? And Scott said, ask her. I said, okay, Mr. Happy Pants. Heather, why are we here today? And she started telling me all these things that were going on. I feel like we're roommates. I feel like we don't have anything in common. This is a couple who had everything in common. And they're going on and on and on and on. And she's telling me all this stuff about how, you know, if she wants to know something, he doesn't talk to her. Like, he comes home from work and he just doesn't tell her. She says, how's your day? He says, fine. And then he's on the phone talking to a friend and he's giving the friend the blow-by-blow details. And she said, I'm just tired of it. And I said, well, Scott, what about you? And he goes, I can't do anything right. No matter what I do, she criticizes me. If I wash the dishes, she shows me the one that I didn't wash. If I mow the lawn, she says, I got too close to the azaleas. I'm tired of trying, Steve. I can't please her anymore. So I turned back to Heather and I said, Heather, is there anything else you want to add? And she shared a few more things. And then, ladies, she went from talking from her head to her heart, and all of a sudden she got to her stomach. And I love that part. See, as long as you're talking to me from your head, I can't help you. When you're talking to me from your heart, it means that there's hope. But when you talk to me from your stomach, we're good to go. She went from her head, from her heart, to her stomach. And she was talking about the stuff from her head, and then she started to share her heart, and then all of a sudden she blurted out, didn't mean to do it, and goes in crescendo with tears. And he doesn't even say, God bless you, when I sneeze. Now, for a minute, both Scott and I were like Scooby-Doo. What? I've been doing counseling for a long time. So I quickly wheeled my chair over to her, grabbed her by both hands, and I said, Heather, look up at me. And she was mortified. She didn't mean for that to come out. I said, Heather, look up at me. I said, I'm so sorry Scott doesn't say God bless you when you sneeze. And she looked at me like, can we have another counselor? And Scott's looking at me like, we're paying for this? And I said, Heather, when you were a little girl and you sneezed, what did your dad do? She said he would say, God bless you. I said, all the time? She said, yeah. And all of a sudden, she tells me a story that she remembered from when she was a teenager. She said, yeah, I remember one time he was in the garage where he has this car, this old car that he used to work on. And he was in the garage, and I was in the house. And I sneezed in the house. And he opened the door to the garage, to the house, and yelled, God bless you, sweetheart. Bless you, princess. And I said, how did that make you feel? She said, like I mattered, that I wasn't invisible. You know what she was telling me about Scott? Was that he made her feel like she didn't matter and that she was invisible. I said, Heather, does Scott know this story? She said, no. I look at Scott to ask him what he thinks, and he is gooey. He starts bawling, and he kind of like slides out of his chair. He scoops her up in his arms, and he's holding her, and they're hugging. And when they came in not talking to each other, it was just so much friction. And they're saying to each other, I'm sorry, I love you, I didn't know that, and all this going on and on. And y'all, I'm watching this, and all I could think, please forgive me, but all I could think of was, man, I'm good. So I kept talking to him, and I got to about, I said, Heather, let me ask you a question. When you were dating and you sneezed and Scott didn't say God bless you, did it bother you then? She goes, yeah. I said, why didn't you say anything? She goes, well, I thought it was silly. I didn't want to appear needy. How do you think you look now, princess? Okay? Ladies, listen to me. Please listen to me. You are adorable. I don't know how you view yourself. I don't know how other people view you, but you are adorable. When God the Father starts his day is when you wake up. You hear what I'm saying? And I don't know if that's theologically crazy, but I want you to hear heart to heart. I want to go past from your head. I want to go to your heart. You are adorable. And when you wake up, God goes, oh, good, she's up. Okay? But a lot of you don't feel that way. And what happens is because of things in our life, the way maybe you weren't honored when you were a child, and maybe you weren't honored when you were dating, maybe you thought maybe that, I guess this is what I have to settle for. But ladies, I want to tell you something. God wants your husband to treat you the way God sees you. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? God wants husbands to treat their wives like God sees them. Okay? This is who she is. Treat her as such. And what happened is Scott and Heather stopped treating each other that way. And I said, so when you were dating and he didn't say God bless you, it bothered you. Yeah. I said, Scott, when you were dating, if she would have said, hey, would you say God bless you when I sneeze? I know it's silly. Would you have done it? He said, oh, absolutely. You see, ladies, you have needs that are really, they're little treasures in you. And God knows them, but your husband doesn't because he can't read your mind. Let me tell you something about your husband. Anything he can do to please you, he wants to do, but sometimes, ladies, you got to be honest, you make it a little difficult because you want him to read your mind. If you could say something as simple as this, honey, when I sneeze, would you say God bless you? You know what that says to a man? I can do that. I can do that. I can't always understand emotionally even how I feel, let alone try to figure out how you're feeling. But when you go at you, I can go, God bless you. In fact, they will lay in wait. They'll go, okay, okay. And you cough. God bless you. It was a cough. Oh, man, I was so close. Oh, man. She's going to sneeze, and I'm going to be ready, man. And when you sneeze, it goes, God bless you. He's like, reporting for duty. Right, guys? That's what we want to do. She can't read your mind either. Yes, she can. But anyway, And it never bothers me what couples are fighting about. It only troubles me what they're not talking about. It's never what you're fighting about. It's what you're not talking about. And you see, Scott and Heather's marriage was actually put back on track. It got off track by a sneeze. It got put back on track by a God bless you. Because they never talked about it. And here's the pattern that I've seen. When you won't talk about this much with your spouse, you get real comfortable there. And it becomes habit. And when you're comfortable not talking to your spouse about this much, it's pretty easy to not talk about that much. And all of a sudden, you're not talking about a lot of things. How was work today? Fine. And you had the day from hell. But you're just exhausted and you're thinking, what's the point? As soon as I start to talk, they're going to say this. And you know, when you start anticipating what your spouse is going to say, you're in trouble. Because you're mind reading and you can't do that. And when you get comfortable not talking about this much, guess what? You get comfortable not talking about this much. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be real straight with you. When you stop talking about this much, you're probably starting to talk to somebody else. You with me? You say, well, that's kind of a silly story, Steve. That's Scott and Heather. Let me tell you a couple more, just to see if I have time to do this. What time is it? Okay, I got time to do this. Not really, but I'm going to do it. There was a couple in my office, and she went from her head to her heart to her stomach and said, this is just like the toilet paper. And I'm like, do tell. I looked at him. He had no idea what she was talking about. Before I can go any further, how many of you, when it comes to your toilet paper, you have a preference? You don't care about the brand as much as you do the way it's on the roller. Can I see waterfall people? Want it coming at you? Let me see waterfall people. How many of you want it going down the back side of the wall? How many of you don't care? You just want your spouse to leave you some? Anybody else married to this person that the roll will be empty, but and they'll take a full roll, but instead of putting it on the holder, they just set it on top of it? Like, can you not multitask? Well, yeah, come on, man, help me out here, right? Help me. So she said, this is just like the toilet paper. They weren't doing well. They weren't talking about this much. He was at work one day. She walks by the hall bath, and she sees that the toilet paper is cascading down the back side of the wall. She gets mad and wants to turn it around to make it waterfall. And in her anger and in her, you know, she reached out and snatched the toilet paper off the roller, but she pulled the whole holder out of the wall, drywall and everything, and went, and slammed it down on the toilet and said, it's all his fault. He has no idea this has happened. He comes home from work. Hey, babe. Hey. Everything okay? Fine. Walks by, sees the toilet paper holder, and says, honey, what's that? It's all your fault. I wasn't even here. I had a couple in my office. This is seriously sad. This is just like the dish was bad. This is seriously sad. I know these people. They're not in a good place, and he's not a good guy. We're working on him. She said, and I quote, he loads the dishwasher that way, so I'll kill myself. She was serious. She was so broken, so torqued, that she felt like the way he loaded the dishwasher was so that she would accidentally slit her wrist and kill herself. Can I ask y'all a question? How many of y'all, when you load the dishwasher, when you put the silverware in, you do it with the forks and knives facing up. Can I see your hands? How many of you do it forks and knives facing down? Okay. She was a tines down. He was a fork tines up. He was traveling. He had loaded the dishwasher, started it, and left. And she's just broken. She reaches into the dishwasher to unload it, and she slices her wrist. And it wasn't really bad, okay? It wasn't that bad. It broke the skin. It did cut, but there was no major damage. You know, a gauze pad fixed it. But she clutches her wrist and crumbles to the floor and cries out, my God, he's trying to kill me. He's trying to make me kill myself. And standing in the doorway of the kitchen is their 5-year-old daughter. I am passionate about helping people get back to talking about this much. Well, how do we do that? Well, you're going to have to come back after intermission. Because what I want to do is I'm going to challenge you with something. You guys have seen each other naked, haven't you? Have you seen each other naked? What's fascinating to me is that I talked to couples who have seen each other naked, but they won't talk about this much. How many of you have gone to the bathroom in front of each other? Can I see your hands? Did you ever think you would do that when you were in middle school? I can't wait to poop in front of the opposite sex. You know you're married when you're sitting there and you're just having a conversation. And guys are the worst. Hey, honey, what's for dinner? Chicken? Well, bring me a piece. So...